Hello, this is Julie Siddell of the University of Illinois, remotely presenting my presentation for the 2022 IGU, Temporalities of Infrastructural Reuse, the Past and Present of Illinois Waterways and Their Role in Sustainable Transport. I'd first like to acknowledge my PhD student, Jose Acosta Cordova, who is doing his PhD work on the Chicago end of the corridor that I'm discussing. And I also want to thank Anders Larsson for doing what he could to enable my participation, even though I can't be with you in the session today. So on the first main slide, I begin with a quote from Elaine Linhi Oh about why temporality is important. I think it's relevant to a number of papers in this session, even if you aren't engaging explicitly with this literature. So I thought I'd put it in here to start us off. The ethics of how people engage with the inequalities of socio-spatial relations and or manifest agency through temporal framings, e.g. historical periodization and strategies, are core to the concerns of social geography. So I've been looking at the historical geography of the Chicago region, specifically the corridor that in the past and present has tied it into national and global networks of trade and logistics. What I'm presenting today is a piece of that work which compares how two different parallel pieces of infrastructure, one which literally supplanted the other, have been reused in different ways, and how that reuse is tied up with different temporalities. As Ho says, how we frame temporality matters to social geography, including sustainable transport. So on the next slide, there's been a temporality turn of sorts in the Anglo-American geography literature in the last decade, including the study of infrastructure and mobility. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but just to give you a little bit of background, Ho refers to temporality as the state of existing within or having some relationship with time, as opposed to the objective state of clock time. So the socially constructed aspects of time, in other words. And then with respect to the relationship between transportation and infrastructure, Shing divides the concept of temporality into three different types, and I'll be drawing on all of those here. So first is the life cycle of infrastructure itself, or the rhythm of being built, being maintained or not, and decaying or becoming obsolete. Second would be the imaginaries that connect infrastructure to past, present, and future. This is often the promise of proposed or planned infrastructure and the way it will bring everyone into a more positive and or more modern future. Third is the experience of infrastructure users, the speeding up and slowing down that occurs sometimes by choice and sometimes not, or the ways in which users are sorted from each other and from non-users by their differential speeds. So all three of these are connected, of course, as I'll show in my examples of two closely related pieces of transport and water infrastructure in the Chicago region, the Illinois and Michigan Canal and the Illinois Waterway. What I want to argue is that, as Ho says, our temporal framings and strategies matter to how we consider the reuse of infrastructure in the light of infrastructural time, and especially the implications regarding more sustainable reuse. So on the next slide, the Illinois and Michigan Canal is basically the reason why Chicago is Chicago. It was dug in the mid-1800s to link the Great Lakes and the Mississippi River watersheds, binding Chicago to New York and to New Orleans, and placing all three cities as key distribution sites for natural resources being extracted from the North American interior, and for white settlers and manufactured goods moving into that same interior. The canal brought the hinterland closer to the city and vice versa. And even though it was only a couple of years before it was supplanted in volume by a railroad line, it established patterns of flow that still drive the global logistics system today. So as shown here, if we start in the upper right-hand corner in the city of Chicago, the canal paralleled the south branch of the Chicago River until it crossed the subcontinental divide, which is very shallow at this point, and paralleled the Des Plaines River until it became part of the Illinois River. These rivers were too unreliable in depth in the summer because of unreliable rainfall, so the canal had to continue nearly 100 miles downstream from Chicago, as again is pictured here. Along most of its length, the canal stimulated small-scale growth in the form of inns, factories, small-scale extraction operations. Where it entered the city of Chicago, it combined with late-going ships to spur the development of lumber yards, grain mills, and warehousing facilities, as the next map shows from the 1880s, with downtown in the upper right corner and the canal just entering from the lower left. The underlying economic force that drove the city's growth was the natural resources being carried along in this canal, plus the land speculation both in the city center and along the canal's length. But essentially, this particular neighborhood that you can see with all these inlets being constructed to handle traffic coming from the river and especially coming from the canal were the early industrial heart of the city of Chicago. But the Illinois and Michigan Canal was too small, not just for ships, but for water. As the city of Chicago grew, its wastes were diverted from Lake Michigan, its source of drinking water, and sent down the canal. But it wasn't wide enough or deep enough, and so the Illinois Waterway opened in 1901 to send Chicago's wastewater downstream to the Illinois River and onto the Mississippi. By this point, freight traffic had largely moved to the railroads, so while the initial waterway was called the Sanitary and Ship Canal to reflect its dual purposes, shipping soon became relegated to bulk items like coal or sand. Industrial uses spread downstream from the waterway's northernmost point, as you can see on this image, centered in the same location as the previous one, but with more development that's happened, with additional slips being dug to accommodate traffic, and a little bit later than this image, two coal-fired power plants locating along the waterway in the early 20th century to take advantage of coal delivery. Now, the Illinois Waterway is also the Illinois River, and that's what the next image shows. It was dredged and is maintained by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers as a 9-foot deep channel, not quite 3 meters deep. For the last 10 miles or so to the north, the waterway is a separate parallel water course just north of the Illinois and Michigan Canal, connecting to that same industrial area in the city as where the canal started. Having been replaced, the canal fell into disuse and eventually was paved over by Interstate 55, while the waterway continues to perform its waste dilution function as well as occasional shipping. So we have these two pieces of transport infrastructure that have performed the same function in the past, but have been reused in very different ways. So the next image illustrates, because of the I&M Canal's importance to the development of Chicago and to the country as a whole, it was designated in 1984 as the country's first National Heritage Corridor. Rather than a national park or a national monument, which manage federally owned land that's deemed to be of national significance, a National Heritage Corridor is an overlay of sorts that does not change existing land issues. It acknowledges the historic events that took place in a location or region while not interfering with existing activities in that place. Now, unlike the canal system in the UK, US canals have rarely been maintained or restored. Instead, as the next image shows, we often have the towpaths alongside them preserved as cycling and walking trails. That's the case with the I&M Canal, where the towpath is now a trail for about 60 miles of its original 100-mile length. Small towns along the trail welcome the tourist traffic that comes through, with an emphasis on historic features of the landscape and present-day recreation opportunities. As the next image shows, the Park Service runs a canal boat where you can cruise up and down the canal and hear stories and songs from the past. Also, unlike trails in Europe, this towpath trail does not have many connections. It is something that you would drive to in order to walk or bike on, not something that you would use to go to a specific destination, but for exercise and for being outdoors. In fact, there is a bike share program set up along the trail so that you don't even have to bring your own bike. You can borrow one on site. So the National Heritage Corridor here provides recreational and tourism opportunities at a small scale for largely local consumption. Within the city of Chicago, the reuse of the waterways is very different. as the next map shows. The infrastructure itself is mostly gone. The canal is buried under a highway, and while the waterway still exists and is still maintained, again, it's only used for bulk goods. If you look at the map of the area today, shown here, some of those inlets remain, but many of them have been filled in, and the domination of the roadway system is really clear. However, this remains an industrial area, and specifically, it remains a distribution area. Grocery wholesaling has relocated from the West Loop, which is now a neighborhood of trendy restaurants and loft condos. Distribution centers from Amazon, Target, FedEx, and others dot the landscape today, continuing that historic function of connecting city and hinterland, but this time for consumption rather than production. Indeed, the city of Chicago and the county in which it sits both consider freight and logistics as a key growth industry for the future, and the northern end of the old I&M Canal as one key site for that growth to happen. The consequences for neighboring communities are notable. Neighborhood activists fought for years to get the two remaining coal-fired power plants in this city shut down. The one in a gentrifying neighborhood will become a data center, given its high connectivity to the electrical grid, while the one adjacent to the largest Latino neighborhood in Chicago will be a major Amazon distribution center. Smokestacks here are being replaced with trucks, which not only produce pollution but threaten pedestrians and cyclists. So let me go back to these different types of temporality. And in the final section here, I'll discuss how they apply to these cases. So there's the life cycle of the infrastructure itself. The I&M Canal was built in the national interest, its stone walls and basic locks linking two great watersheds and channeling flows of people and goods that continue to this day. It lasted for 2 years before the railroad started running in parallel, making it obsolete in a relatively short period of time. The Illinois Waterway, on the other hand, continues to perform its work of navigation for a limited set of goods, but because it also serves the function of sanitation, and again continues to be maintained by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. When it comes to the imaginaries that connect infrastructure to the past, the National Heritage Corridor does that for the canal right there in the name. It was an important part of the history of this region and this nation, but it is over. We designate the corridor as important, but the economic activity which it led to takes priority today in terms of other land uses than officially designated public lands. Visitors are encouraged to drive to the trail and then walk or cycle, or to ride the canal boat on a simple out and back trip. These therefore become outdated modes of transportation that are only good for recreation, not actually moving through this corridor today. The future for this infrastructure is in its engagement with the past, not only in how that past is signed and interpreted, but in how we move through its space through modes that themselves become associated with the past. For the Illinois Waterway and its function as a freight corridor, the past, present, and future are the same. This is a key site for logistics development based on its history and its position within Chicago and the region. The waterway might not be the main site of that activity. There is no discussion, for example, of container barge shipping as one would see in Paris, despite the river that flows past these distribution sites and into the heart of Chicago. But the transportation modes that share this corridor, road and rail, are the sites of future distribution routes. The positive future of logistics-driven growth is touted as bringing jobs to the area when we know that warehousing and trucking jobs are often few in number and low in pay. Finally, Shin considers temporality in terms of user experience. For the canal, users of the towpath are there for recreational reasons, slowing down and experiencing a bygone way of travel. Users are sorted into those who can get to the trail and enjoy its separation from roads and streets, and those who have to travel by cycle or foot in suburban and rural areas without the protection of a separated trail. For the Illinois Waterway, consumers in the Chicago region are the users, expecting swift delivery of their goods from the distribution centers lining the waterway. These centers generate train and truck traffic, which in turn slows down and endangers nearby residents. Residents are sorted into those who drive e-commerce demand with the swift delivery that implies, and those who have to slow down and be more careful due to increased truck traffic on their neighborhood streets. In short, the different temporalities associated with these two pieces of infrastructure, obsolete and of the past, versus still relevant spatially, if not physically, shape the possibilities for sustainable futures. If walking and cycling are only for recreation, it's harder to see them as present-day sustainable modes. If the Illinois Waterway established the route that has since been replaced by rail and road, waterborne transport is not seen as a contemporary solution to problems of freight congestion and sustainability. If we could change our thinking about the temporality of these modes, we could put them back on the table and reuse the pathways and infrastructures of the past for more sustainable purposes.